This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca, we welcome you to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleague, Richard Pollock. Producer Remus is with us as well. Ezra's away from the show today and Saturday, enjoying a nice little vacation for Mr. Ezzy. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Joining us in about 15 minutes' time to talk about the St. Louis Blues, Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is going to be joining us. And then in the bottom hour at 7:30 this evening, we're going to be joined by Ottawa Senators play-by-play voice Dean Brown to talk about the surprising Senators. Andrew Hammond, one of the best stories of the NHL season so far, and we'll discuss with Dean if they can actually pull it off and get themselves back into a playoff spot. Speaking of a playoff spot, Richard Pollock, Winnipeg Jets back in a playoff spot after last night's 5-2 commanding victory over the San Jose Sharks. Question for you, sir, is what were you most impressed by the Jets' play, or were you more discouraged by how listless the San Jose Sharks looked?
I thought the Jets played well. I've seen them play better. Like, they didn't play poorly by any means, but I've seen them play better. And so it's good when you're not, if you're a fan of the team, it's certainly a positive when your team plays well, maybe not as well as they can, and they still are able to have a commanding 5-2 victory over a team trailing them in the standings, Drew. San Jose looked done. And I don't just think they're done. We've said it on the show for a while, so this is no surprise as to how I feel about this. But not only do I think they're done for this year, I think they're done for a while. And if you watch last night's game, I mean, aside from Joe Thornton getting an assist on a play essentially created by Joe Pavelski in the first San Jose goal, Joe Thornton was completely not noticeable.
He had two assists. He actually had an assist on the 5-2 goal.
The play on the play. Yeah, I mean, that one, the second one, he gets a pass to Burns at the point. Burns makes a shot, and it's a nice tip by Pavelski. I'm talking, Thornton takes a shot on the first goal.
Sure.
But the point is when he was noticeable. He wasn't even noticeable on that second goal. He was noticeable on the first one, and that was it. Patrick Marleau, spurts of time you may have noticed him, not much at all. Those are your two guys. You're in a crunch. This last night's game was essentially your season. And they came out and they brought nothing.
For both teams to some regard.
I mean, think more so for San Jose than for Winnipeg. But yeah, that's a fair point, Drew. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I mean, Antti Niemi, terrible goal to start the game. Heady play, by Adam Lowry, not only to win the battle with Brent Burns, but also to put the puck on net. Now, does he think there's a spot, there's a space there that Niemi's leaving? I don't know. But in any event, you get a 1-0 lead. San Jose doesn't push back at all. I mean, sure, they push back in the second period after they're down 3-0. You can expect the Jets to step back a bit and, you know, make sure they protect the middle. Mm-hmm. But overall, I mean, the Jets came out. I thought that the Mark Scheifele line, Scheifele was very good. Wheeler was very good. Stafford was very good. As I noted to you yesterday, I think they play particularly well against non-physical teams. Those guys, they get their feet moving. A San Jose or a Tampa Bay. St. Louis will be a tough challenge tomorrow because of the way they play. It's not exactly a passive game. I mean, the Sharks are a soft team. Let's be honest here.
Sure.
And the Jets were able to do what they needed to do last night and play particularly well when they needed to. Again, I've seen them play better 60 minutes, but they turned it on in the beginning. And, second wasn't great, but again, they were up 3-0. So overall, I thought it was a solid performance by Winnipeg, a very poor performance by San Jose, and that's why you see the 3-goal gap.
Well, you might say, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, the Jets jumping out to that 3-0 lead and a very good first period.
Yep.
And, I mean, to me, you know, what goes to show you, you know, sort of how this game, you know, the tail of this game is, you know, the Sharks make it 3-1, as you would sort of expect that they're going to. Like you said, they came out and the Sharks were the better team to start the second period. Mm-hmm. So it's 3-1, and at this point in time, you know, when you got a 2-goal game, it can go either way. And then the Jets with that fourth goal.
Yep.
Where it's sort of the goal mouth scramble on the left-hand side of Alex Stalock, who's replaced Antti Niemi, and the puck comes out to Drew Stafford, and he goes with the wraparound on his strong side, and then the puck is just sitting in the crease, Stalock can't handle it, and Wheeler, Wheeler puts the puck in and it's 4-1. It just showed to me, and you know, we talked about this as we were watching the game, the Jets wanted it more than the Sharks did last night.
That's fair. I mean, the Jets' effort levels, like the Jets and Calgary are a couple of the teams that that show you what effort really does. I mean, the Jets have more talent than Calgary, so Calgary is a great example of effort. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs, for example, the Sharks are examples of the antithesis of just that. We haven't also mentioned, I thought Andrei Pavlik played a very solid game. I thought he was in control most of the evening. Wasn't, you know, flailing all over the place, and seemed to be confident. The crowd was, you know, obviously supportive. They had, what, 40 shots on net. I mean, a lot of them non-threatening, but there was, you know, the Brent Burns breakaway, and there were opportunities.
Sure.
I thought he was very solid, and you have to think he's going to be the starter tomorrow night.
I would certainly expect him to be in net tomorrow night. I mean, he's done nothing to show any shakiness over the last two games. I mean, they went into Tampa Bay, a very difficult place to win. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was very solid, giving up the one goal. Yesterday, they just needed him to sort of make the saves. The shots weren't especially difficult for the most part, with the exception of the, you know, the Brent Burns breakaway. And he was just solid and comfortable mm-hmm. in the net. Mm-hmm. And, you know what? We've been saying, you know, it seemed that they tried to give Michael Hutchinson the job as the number one goaltender. You know, he started those 7-8 games in a row, and then the Jets realized, look, he's not ready right now maybe to handle that load. And Pavlik has stepped in for the last two games and been all the Jets could hope for.
Yeah, I mean, it's two games, but he's been good. And the truth is, you ride the hot hand here. I think the Jets coaching staff was right to, you know, give Michael Hutchinson a shot, play some more games. He had earned that. And you mentioned he didn't perform, and you go back to, you know, a guy who's been in the league for a while. And if he keeps going on a run, great. And if he has some struggles, you go back to Hutchinson. I mean, that's the thing. You just go with the hot hand right now. And then you'll see what happens if you're able to make the playoffs, which, you know, seems to change daily. But after last night's results, and obviously Saturday's surprising results, I'd say, you know, they're looking pretty solid. But, you know, we'll see as that goes, because we're not going to break it down every game, because it goes up and down.
Sure. And, I mean, they're in a good position, obviously. And, you know, we'll look at the both playoff pictures later on in the show. They're in a good position in that no matter what happens tonight, if Los Angeles playing Anaheim tonight, the Jets can't be passed in the standings like they were on Monday night when the Kings... Because Calgary's not playing. When the Kings defeated the Coyotes, they were able to leapfrog the Jets. Mm-hmm. The Jets are now, you know, you're now at the point where the Kings and the Flames are battling for that third spot in Pacific as opposed to also the second wild card spot.
Yeah, it was the same before, though.
Well, no, because when the Kings won on Monday, they leapfrogged the Jets. They didn't leapfrog the Flames. Whereas if the Kings...
Right, yes. Well, I mean, they've been jockeying for that third spot also in the wild card.
Yes, exactly. Yes. But I'm saying the Jets are now, at least for another night, are going to be in a playoff spot.
I mean,
spot.
This is going to go, you know, the Jets have a difficult schedule down the stretch to play more home games than road games. We'll get into that after, but it's going to be a, you know, night-to-night thing, right?
Sure. It's exciting.
I mean, you go by the percentage points, they're going to change by 10-15% probably in evening, so I just got to back off a bit on that.
Sure, of course, if you look at that, because everything is, you know, it's just that tight, obviously, and mm-hmm. and interesting, you know, for watching. You know, a little more on the Stafford-Scheifele-Wheeler line. You know, why do you think they've been performing so well since that sort of became a combo when after Little went down and everything else? And you know, why do you think that line has had such good chemistry?
Well, I think the first reason, Drew, is that there's skill playing together.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a simplified version of why they're succeeding, but I think it is a reason for their success. The fact is you don't have a left winger on the line, but you have a guy playing left wing who doesn't usually. You have three right-handed shots, but you have guys who can move the puck. I mean, all those guys, Drew, can score and can pass. I mean, they're not just shooters. So the puck moves. Mm-hmm. And when you know it's a possibility of getting the puck, you're more apt to be involved in the play. That was always the problem with Evander Kane. When his team line mates knew they weren't going to get the puck, they're less involved in the play. And people could speak to, you know, reasons for that. We're not going to get into that. But that the idea is when you're engaged all the time,
sure,
when you know you might get the puck, you're going to play a better style. When you're playing with guys who you know where to go and, you know, are good passers and have good shots. I mean, of the three guys, I think you'd say probably Wheeler is the worst shot of the three. I mean, Scheifele's shot's terrific, and Stafford can shoot it as well. I'm not saying Wheeler has a bad shot. I'm just saying, like, you're talking about a high skill level. Sure. Wheeler's the best passer of the bunch, but they're not bad. They're certainly good passers. So you're talking about high skill playing together, and I think, as I said to you earlier, that's also who they're playing against.
Sure.
I think it helps in that regard. I'm not saying any of the guys are soft, but I think they have more room to do things you know, I think there's a move, was it last night, Scheifele had his head down and went middle of the ice, and I thought, you know, against a different team, that might not be
sure. I think that
might not
you,
be standing
you
up.
Said, you know, if this is the olden days and Scott Stevens the defenseman up against them.
Well, it was a head down move right at the red line, and he kind of, you know, he made a juke, and I thought, woo, you know, if that right side defenseman actually wanted to hit somebody,
yeah. Well, the Sharks didn't want to hit anybody last
night. They didn't,
night, so
yeah.
It was fortunate. I mean, that was like you said, that was a soft game for the Jets to play against. The Shark. I mean, I'm trying to think of any significant body contact by the Sharks in the course of the game, and I can't really think of any.
And John Scott had a few hits, but he's not even an NHL player. Another thing is interesting, Doug Wilson spoke about Joe Thornton, and the relationship is great down in Boca.
Uh-huh.
And Joe Thornton, David Pollock had in the San Jose Mercury News, basically had a comment. He asked Joe Thornton about the comments, and he just said, you know, next question kind of thing.
Well, Joe Thornton said, you know, yeah, they're fine, but let's move on.
Next question.
Yeah, next question. Doesn't want to, I mean, look, Joe Thornton, that relationship's not fine. I think that's fairly obvious for anybody to see. And if you read Pierre Lebrun today on ESPN.com, because the Sharks went to Toronto and they practiced at the old Maple Leaf Gardens, so they were able to practice there today, which is sort of a neat thing for a team to do. And it really did sound like there is the entire dressing room seems to be on the side of Joe Thornton, and there's an us against him mentality, him being Doug Wilson, and you've got poor Todd McClellan, who's a pretty good NHL coach, caught in the middle here.
You do, and he's going to get a job after the season's over. Likely, they'll probably clean house, I think, coaching staff-wise.
Mm-hmm.
There's teams that are known to have interest. I've heard a few teams have interested, and so he's very well-regarded around the league.
Sure.
I think he's done with this group, though.
Probably. It's probably time. It's, you know, and not to say that he's done a bad job, necessarily.
I think he's done. I don't think he believes in this group. If you watch that team skate off the ice last night, I don't think you have a lot of belief in that room.
Here's just an interesting thought, and I mean, obviously, they know nothing about this, but
he's
got a lot of ties to the Detroit Red Wings. That's where he got hired from when he was with the Sharks. So if Mike Babcock moves on there, there's worse replacements than you could get than Todd McClellan, necessarily, in Detroit.
There are worse replacements, and I think that depends on where. Obviously, it depends on where Mike Babcock goes, Drew. If he stays in Detroit.
Well, if he stays in Detroit, it's not an issue.
Well, then maybe McClellan. You know, Toronto wants Mike Babcock. We think.
Sure.
Maybe, you know, you hear about team like Buffalo probably making a run, Edmonton, and you have a possibility of Pittsburgh. I've heard a lot of different teams who'd be interested.
Brendan Shanahan would have a relationship with Todd McClellan as well.
Yes, so that could be some ties there as well.
Yeah, so that'll be something to watch for in the offseason. Before that, we got a lot of regular season to go and some playoffs. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, talk about the St. Louis Blues, the Jets' opponent tomorrow. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
6:15 in the evening. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock. Producer Remus is here as well. At Illegal Curve on Twitter, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news, IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Jeremy Rutherford. Jeremy, good evening and welcome to Winnipeg.
Hey, thank you guys very much. Good to be with you.
Yeah. Jeremy, you look at the NHL's Western Conference, you look specifically at the Central Division, and the St. Louis Blues are now in the driver's seat, a point up on the Predators with two games in hand. If the Blues end up finishing in that position, they're going to be able to avoid the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round. How important is that for the St. Louis Blues, their psyche maybe, to avoid the Blackhawks in round one of the playoffs?
Well, it's interesting that you ask, because I've been asked a lot about that in St. Louis, and for the longest time I was saying that you want to avoid the Chicago Blackhawks. The Blues feel pretty good about their chances this year, and all you need to do is drop the puck against the team that knocked you out in the first round last year after you had a 2-0 lead in the series. However, there are some people in St. Louis who think that even though the Blackhawks are playing pretty well of late, that it might be good to get them in the first round without Patrick Kane. So we'll see. You know, if it's me, I don't want to play the Chicago Blackhawks, but in this Western Conference that you talked about, I don't know who the heck you want to play, because you look at these wild card teams and Calgary's playing pretty well, even though the Blues beat up on them last night. And we've all seen these Blues-Jets games in the past couple weeks. Two of them in the last 11 days have been really tight, so I don't know that the Blues want to see the Jets either.
You know, Jeremy, considering the way the Blues finished last season, is Ken Hitchcock approaching things differently at all heading into the playoffs this year?
I don't think so. I think just the focus has been on playing well at the end. Last year, the Blues lost their last six games of the regular season. We all remember that. And then had to face the Blackhawks in the first round. And, you know, a big part of it was injuries. So this year they have a lot of depth. They brought in some guys, Marcel Gotch, a little bit before the deadline. Then Olli Jokinen, Sabinek Mikalic, and some other guys, Robert Bortuzzo, all at the deadline. And it's created a situation where the Blues have guys going in and out of the lineup. Barrett Jackman, who's played in all 69 games this season, was a healthy scratch last night. This is a guy who's number two on the franchise games played list. So it's not too often that you find him sitting out. So I think what they're trying to do is use their depth to their advantage, give some guys a break, make sure they're not tired, try to keep them healthy, and just hope that they're playing their best hockey. They're really trying to not make an emphasis on where they finish and who they play. So if you're asking about what type of approach are they taking this year, I think that's the biggest thing, is that they're just hoping that they're playing their best hockey heading into the postseason. And when you look at the at their past couple games, back-to-back shutouts, three shutouts in the last four games, it looks like they are playing to that level.
Our guest on NHL Midweek is Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, talking about the Blues. Blues obviously in town to play the Jets tomorrow evening at MTS Center. Jeremy, a player who's not in the Blues lineup right now, but the Blues would certainly welcome back, and he wouldn't even have to compete for a spot, really, is Kevin Shattenkirk, who was obviously having a tremendous year before he went out with his, I believe, abdominal injury. Any update on his health? And if he's not back for the, you know, for the start of the playoffs, how serious of a concern is that for the Blues on the back end?
Well, he is on the trip, the six-game road trip, but he's not going to play anytime soon, at least not tomorrow, the next couple games, because he's still recovering. He's just with the team getting treatment and skating. The timetable puts him at about the end of March, and, you know, while the Blues won't say publicly maybe which game they're targeting for Kevin Shattenkirk's return, Ken Hitchcock has made the comment that when he does come back, there won't be much of a season left in terms of the regular season. So you'd think that he'd get a couple regular season games left if you're listening to Ken Hitchcock, and then just hope for the best that he can get up to speed as quickly as possible. And you're right, he doesn't have to worry about a spot. They're going to insert him in the lineup. A 75% Kevin Shattenkirk is better than a lot of players. So right now, just skating with the team, getting treatment, but not very close to a return in terms of this road trip.
You know, Jeremy, you look at this team, and I see, you could argue, the deepest team in the National Hockey League, you know, forward and defense, and obviously solid coaching. I still have some concern about the goaltending. And is this, I mean, look at Brian Elliott's numbers are really solid, although he plays in front of a heck of a team. Jake Allen's aren't, you know, solid necessarily for the whole season. How do you see the goaltending playing out coming into the playoffs here? Like, is this going to be one guy for sure? Do you think Hitchcock's going to have a quick hook when they get there? How do you think it'll all play?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. This is the first time that Brian Elliott has been the guy. Now, he came in for Jaroslav Halak a couple years ago because Halak got injured, but this is the first year where from day one of the regular season, you knew that Brian Elliott was going to be the guy to start game one of the playoffs. And so it's just going to be interesting. I mean, he's had terrific numbers the past 4 years in St. Louis and played pretty well, but I think around the league it's still a question mark whether Brian Elliott can take this team deep in the playoffs. But I think the key is what you said, is that he plays behind a pretty good defense. And, you know, I just mentioned back-to-back shutouts, three in the last four. Brian Elliott is now the franchise leader in shutouts.
It's crazy.
For the St. Louis Blues. He picked up his 21st last night. You know, I talked to him last night, and he said, 4 years ago, I didn't even know if I'd be in St. Louis. I never imagined myself in St. Louis, and now I'm the franchise leader in shutouts. This is a guy who signed a two-way contract for $600,000 and battled Ben Bishop for the backup job behind Jaroslav Halak 4 years ago. So I guess what I'm saying is he's overcome a lot of odds. He's continued to battle. His teammates love him. Will he be, you know, off on his own, and Ken Hitchcock, will he go to Jake Allen if Brian Elliott falters? We don't know that yet, because it's the first time they've gone into a playoff series with this sort of arrangement. I think they'll give Brian Elliott the benefit of the doubt and see what he can do in the playoffs, and just know that you have Jake Allen there, but Jake Allen doesn't have a lot of experience, so I don't know that you can go into a series saying we're going to turn to him right away.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Our guest is Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch talking about the St. Louis Blues. And Jeremy, you mentioned a couple of the acquisitions that the Blues made at the trade deadline. I want to specifically ask you about the two defensemen, Zbynek Mihalik coming over from the Arizona Coyotes and Robert Bortuzzo coming over from the Pittsburgh Penguins. How have those two guys looked coming into the Blues defense in the, I guess, probably about half a dozen games or so since the trade deadline?
Well, pretty good, and it's funny because I asked Z, and I call him that because I have trouble with his name, but I talked to him last night, and I said, well, you've played three games, and two of them have been shutouts, so you'll take that, huh? And he said, yeah, anytime. So he really likes this team. I think he's fitting in pretty well. He's played the past couple games with Jay Bouwmeester. We don't know when Kevin Shattenkirk comes back what the pairings will be, but I think Mihalik will definitely be in the lineup, could be in that third pair with Barrett Jackman. But everybody knows what he brings. He's a veteran, he's a shot blocker, and he's done the same thing in his couple games in St. Louis as we've seen throughout his career. And then and as far as Robert Bortuzzo goes, the Blues, you remember, dealt Roman Polak for Carl Gunnarsson last summer, and they gave up a lot of physicality. Gunnarsson can move the puck, and he's helped the Blues in that top four. Right now he's playing with Alex Pietrangelo. But the Blues gave up a tough guy in Roman Polak, and they've missed that. They lacked it, and they realized that. So they traded Ian Cole, a former first-round pick, and got Bortuzzo in the deal. And Bortuzzo's been terrific. I mean, he's held his own. He's stepped up for teammates. He's done the right things at the right time. And in just a handful of games, the teammates love him. So I think there were two pretty good additions, and I think overall the Blues' defense is as deep as it's been. You talk about those top four guys and the Bouwmeesters and the Pietrangelos, so on and so forth, Shattenkirk, but in terms of overall depth, these guys go nine deep.
You know, they do go nine deep, Jeremy. You look at the forwards, I mean, there's a lot of depth there as well. How do you see Ken Hitchcock utilizing, he likes to roll four lines, he certainly has a lot of guys that, you know, at his disposal that a lot of teams don't have with the depth they do have. Do you see him riding the lines the same way he has all year? Do you see him maybe pulling back on some of the, you know, the depth lines and letting the top guns go a little bit more when it comes down to the playoffs in the first round?
Well, it's tough because probably like a lot of coaches, Ken Hitchcock will talk about rolling four lines, and sometimes it'll happen and sometimes it won't. The Blues play best when they're rolling all four lines, like I'm sure a lot of teams do, but sometimes it's just hard to get into that rhythm, you know, the special teams, so on and so forth. So, you know, I honestly don't know right now. I'm kind of still trying to figure out who's going to be in the lineup because they've really been moving guys in and out, even though they've been winning some games here. It's been different guys every night. You know, the other night in Dallas, Steve Ott, who played 9 years with the Stars, was a healthy scratch. Patrick Berglund, who's played the entire season, was a healthy scratch last week. So with the arrival of Gotch, with the arrival of Jokinen, and don't forget about a guy, Chris Porter, who's really done a good job of hanging around, they all keep finding themselves in the lineup, and whoever can make the most of it is going to be the guy in there for the playoffs, of course. So, you know, will they roll four lines? How will they approach the postseason? I still like to see who's going to be in the lineup at that point.
A final question for you, Jeremy. You look at this team, and we talk about, you know, how solid the group is, and we go through the goaltending and then defense and the forwards, and the team brought in Ryan Miller last year, kind of went for that upper echelon, or at least, you know, maybe considered better than what they have right now. We haven't talked about Ken Hitchcock. If this team doesn't succeed in, say, winning in the first round, and he obviously has a tremendous track record, but is his job in question because all the other changes have kind of already been made already?
Well, you know, if his job is in question when the Blues get to the postseason, it's not going to be because Doug Armstrong doesn't think he can coach or he's not the right guy for the job. It's not going to be that. Doug Armstrong has already said that, you know, Ken is in good standing and he'll coach here as long as he wants. You know, they have that Team Canada connection too. If Ken Hitchcock were to move on and he is in the last year of his contract, both sides just agreed to pick up his mutual option for this season, I think it'll be just a matter of everybody believing that it's time to turn the page because this group together hasn't gotten the job done. Look, they've been knocked out of the first round the past 2 years, mm-hmm. Chicago in L.A., and they were swept 3 years ago by L.A. in the second round. So maybe it's just a situation of, hey, we tried it 4 years, we've tinkered with the team, we've moved some things around, and it just hasn't worked. So perhaps it's time to move on. But I don't think it's a situation where they just flat out think that Ken Hitchcock can't get this group to the next level, because I know that Doug Armstrong has a lot of faith in him and believes that he can get the job done. So it remains to be seen. Will Ken Hitchcock still be in St. Louis next year? I'm sure a lot depends on this playoff run.
Jeremy Rutherford covers the St. Louis Blues for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He's a frequent guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jeremy, appreciate your time, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, thanks a lot. We'll see you guys tomorrow, too.
Thanks, Jeremy. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL. This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Jeremy Rutherford, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, for joining us to talk about the Blues. The third of four meetings in what seems to have been about a week's time between these teams. The reason I'm not upset about it, these teams play good games against each other.
Well, yeah, the Blues are good, Drew, and they make the Jets kind of play up to that competition at times. Actually, a lot of the time. And
they've had, I think, something like seven or... I mean, the Jets have been on the wrong side of most of the results, but I think it's like something like six or seven straight one-goal games between those two teams.
Yeah, interesting, because I think that the last time the Blues were here, I don't think they actually played particularly well. I think the first time they were here, they looked a lot better, so Jets fans should be hoping for the last time they came here, the way they played, rather than the first time.
Well, let me ask you this. We're going to talk about the Blues, the preview of the game today. How much lingering effect do you think there is from last Thursday?
None.
Last Tuesday, pardon me.
Not really much, Drew.
No?
These teams are so focused on the other teams in the standings. I mean, the Blues, sure, they want to beat them, and that's important. You hear Blake Wheeler talk about it, but at the end of the day, you're just worried about getting in the playoffs. You got to beat the team in front of you. I mean, I don't think there's personal grudges here or anything like that.
No, I don't think it's personal grudges, but I mean, you know, I agree with you that they're so focused on playing the team in front of them and everything else, but you don't think that when they jump on the ice or you know, when they see them when they're going through the pregame warm-up tomorrow, there's going to be a bit of the sour taste for how it ended last Tuesday isn't going to come back into the Jets' mouth a little bit?
Maybe. I think it's more so if it ended, you know, in more of an insulting way. I mean, it was a wrong by their team. You know, Andre Pavlik should have saved the puck. It wasn't as if something happened. Hit from behind that led to a goal that made
them
really angry.
It's not Claude Lemieux on Chris Draper.
Yeah, it's not, so I think, sure, they want to get some revenge, but I don't think they're going to be distracted here. I mean, the truth is the Blues are looking for first place. They're in first place right now. They have a couple game buffer in terms of Nashville competing with them. The Blackhawks are far ahead of the Jets. So, I mean, right now it looks like these teams might face each other in the first round of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure, you have that in the back of your mind, I guess. But again, I really think you're focused on the task at hand, and you look around the league and everybody's winning all the time, that this is another game against a very good team and they have to be focused. Like, that's cliche, but I think it's true in this case. I really do. I don't think they lose their focus based on who they're playing here, based on a goal that should have been a shot that should have been saved.
I should mention this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. With Passover and Easter coming up in about a couple weeks' time, be sure to get your orders in to Bernstein's Deli. They can take care of your entire Easter dinner, your entire Passover dinner for you. Check them out online, bernsteinsdeli.com. You know, how important, you know, if the playoffs were to start today, the Jets and the Blues would be playing each other. How important do you think it would be for the Jets' confidence to get a victory over the Blues?
I don't think it really matters. You're talking if they play each other in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Two different seasons. I'll tell you how I think about that.
Okay.
One win in game one in St. Louis changes it all anyways.
Sure.
Like, that's the thing. So I don't think it's too big of a deal. I don't think the Jets feel like they can't beat St. Louis.
Well,
like one goal games are different than three goal games.
Sure. I mean, it's not that, you know, they haven't had a ton of success against the Blues, but it certainly isn't for lack of, you know, competitiveness in those games.
For sure. But, you know, Drew, I mean, they haven't had a lot of success against St. Louis because St. Louis has been better than them.
Sure.
And St. Louis still is better than them, but the Jets are...
But the gap is closing.
Yeah, and I don't think it's because the Blues are getting any worse. I think the Jets are just getting better. That's all.
Okay, that's
I don't think that is, you know, if they had played each other in the playoffs in past years, like the Blues and the Hawks, or the Blues and the Kings, or the Kings and the Hawks, then there's a different storyline there. You play 7 games in 14 days, you develop a lot of hate. When you play each other in a short period of time amongst other games, you develop a little more hate,
but you don't. I mean, familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah,
you know, that's why we don't get along.
That's right.
But you're right. I mean, you know, so I think there's probably some contempt between the two teams.
I have to say, I think this is Ezzy's best show in at least a couple of months. Like, he's made a lot of good points.
Yeah. Ezzy, of course, not being here today or Saturday, he'll rejoin us next Saturday, next Wednesday. You're here next Wednesday, or are you gone next Wednesday also?
I am here next Wednesday.
Okay. Yeah. It's, you know, it's hard to keep track of you guys and your busy globetrotting schedules here. But anyways, let's talk about the additions the Blues have made. You know, Mihalik and Bertuzzo are the two additions on the back end. They're probably the more significant of the additions.
Luxury, Drew. When you look at Mihalik playing with Bomeister, I mean, it's a nice compliment of skater, not great skater. Bomeister, real good skater, moves the puck. You know, he's not going to be your most dynamic offensive player. Assist in the Olympics semifinal, notwithstanding.
Sure.
And Mihalik's going to be your solid stay-at-home physical defenseman. Not the greatest puck mover by any means. But he is your third-pairing right-side guy when Shattenkirk comes back, which is frightening for other teams because of how deep this Blues team is. So he can play in your top four, which he is right now. And he adds a nice element, and Jeremy Rutherford comes on, talks about replacing the physicality lost by Roman Polak. Carl Gunnarsson is a skating puck mover. And that's not what Polak, and that's why they acquired him. But they wanted to be physical, not only up front, but on the back end. You want to have, you want to have that continuity in your roster. If you're only tough in the front, and then you get by those forwards on the rush, and you can go into the corners, you're going to have a heyday. So now, they add some physical players like Bertuzzo and Mihalik, and it's a different look.
Looking at the Jets' point of view, we sort of expected Dustin Byfuglien to play last night. Paul Maurice decided to hold him out for another game.
Yeah.
You know, for precautionary reasons.
Well, it turned out to be the right move.
You certainly didn't need Dustin Byfuglien last night. I'd expect full practice again today. I'd expect he's going to be in the lineup tomorrow when the Jets and Blues meet at MTS Center, 7 o'clock puck drop here on TSN 1290. You know, no doubt about it, he's on the back end for you, or do you give any thought to maybe playing him up as a forward at all tomorrow?
No, he's on the back end. He's on the back end because, I mean, sure, Drew, your third line, your UFA line there of Stemniak, Tulusi, and Slater hasn't exactly lit the house on fire, but I still think you put him on the back end, and you have him on the power play and on the point there. Truth is, I don't think if you put him in your top six, you're going to push Lowry down and push Fleury to the middle. That doesn't work. Fleury's not very good at center. He's a right winger. You already have too many right wingers up in your top six. If you decide to play him up front with Tolusti and Slater, I mean, he's not going to do much with those guys anyways. Really?
Sure.
So Tolusti's game doesn't complement his game, and Slater is giving it, was working hard, but can't move around the ice as well as he once did. So I think it's best off to have him on the back end.
So you have a stacked right side of your defense again, which is, you know.
Yeah, which is fine, and you're going to play him more on the power play, and it's certainly great depth. I mean, there's no better right side in the league, probably. You know, you talk about St. Louis and having Pietrangelo, Shattenkirk, and Mihalik. Teams will still take the Jets, Byfuglien, Myers, and Trouba. So that shows you how good they are.
Sure. And St. Louis probably could be the second best right side.
Probably. I mean, the Rangers are up there, too, sure. You know, depending on what they do. And there's some other real good teams. But, yeah, Drew Doughty by himself is probably top three. So. When Voinov was there, I mean, that team was loaded. So,
any concerns about the number of minutes available to go around for the right side defense?
I mean, I mean, that has been, I think, an issue when you have top guns who want to play all the time, and then they're not used to scaling it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. It seems like the Jets kind of play better when they are shorthanded at times. But, I mean, by not having guys on the roster more so than actually shorthanded within the game.
Right.
But
the penalty kill has been playing better.
Yeah, but, I don't think that's something that you mess with. The problem... If you had some right side issues, I could see that. See, if Wheeler and Stafford were out, and you had Perreault and you had Little, then maybe I could see throwing them up there. But another thing to take into account, Drew, is that St. Louis, with their three lines, you're going to have to roll that last pairing out, or at least if you want to. I mean, it goes both ways on this one. Based on the roster as it is for tomorrow's game, you probably want Byfuglien out there, so these are the three lines, Drew. I mean, you have one line with Laterra, one line with Backes and Steen, one line with Paul Stastny. So you can have one of your top guys out against all three of those lines, and they're all able to score. So if there was different roster, different players up front, I might feel differently about it.
Sure.
But I think tomorrow you leave him on the back end.
Tomorrow,
and I think for the rest of the season, you leave him on the back end unless there's more injuries and then you really need somebody.
Well, I mean, of course, that's the luxury that you have with Dustin Byfuglien being able to go up and back. Here's Paul Maurice. He spoke about, will beating the St. Louis Blues mean more? He spoke about that today during his presser with the media. Here's Paul Maurice from earlier today on that.
No, I haven't felt that. You know, we look forward to the game against them. They've been great hockey games. There's not that feeling. There's going to be a team on your list that you have a hard time beating for whatever reason. And usually those, the styles don't match up, or the games, you're never happy with the games. I don't know if I have an example. I haven't been here long enough to know, but I've liked the games against St. Louis, liked all of them. I felt that both teams play real hard. They seem to be close. So I don't have that feeling with them.
Sort of one of the underrated or not really talked about things of the Jets as of late is their home ice record over the last 13 games, 9-2-2 over the last 13. This is a team that had, for the last couple of years, sort of struggled to defend their own turf. 9-2-2, it's a hell of a...
it should be, considering they have the best fans in the league.
Yeah. They do. You saw that. That chant yesterday is...
I was expected, and that's because they're good. You have the best... Forget even the chant, Drew. I'm talking about the emotion in the building.
Sure.
They have the best fans in the league, and you have to take advantage of that.
Yeah,
Tom McClellan talked about it after the game. Once there's a goal, you get the crowd into it. It's tough to play. So, of course. The fans, there's no better fans.
And the smart fans, too. There's...
Of course
come up
are.
With that who's your captain chant last night was... it's just clever. That's...
Sure, yeah. I expected it because you're getting into the intense games now, right? This is when it really matters.
Sure.
And the Jets haven't had this since 96, right? So, the fans are really... sure, you had those games in that lockout year, but this is the real deal here.
Especially with... you got that 9-2-2 record. You play the majority of the rest of your games, the majority of them on home ice.
You do. You play against a heck of a lot of good competition, too.
Yeah, so,
It's going to be good games.
Any extra... You sort of... I'm excited for the last 12 games of this season.
Oh, they're going to be fun.
This is,
there's no duds on the raw. Especially the home. The only bad team you're playing throughout the rest of the year is Edmonton, in Edmonton. So you have home tickets. Keep them.
Keep them, exactly. Yeah. Keep them. That's exactly right. Here's Paul Maurice on the home crowd.
I don't know, is the honest answer. When we feel good at home, I haven't stood behind the bench thinking, I can't wait to get on the road. This is a good building, right? And then... we feel good at home, but I also feel the same way on the road. It doesn't... My sense of the players' mood and energy level hasn't been reflected by where the games are played.
Should
have just stuck with I don't know.
Should have stuck with I don't know, as he said there. Good answer. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the wild card in the playoff races in both the Eastern and Western Conference. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Shortly past 6:45 in the evening, you're listening to NHL Midweek. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Can I say don't be an Ezzy when Ezzy's not here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226. Or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Get to the playoff races in both the Eastern and Western conferences. Spend some time in this segment doing that. You got a bracket filled out for March Madness there, Richie?
Yeah, I filled one out on Monday.
Have you entered Hustler's Pool?
No, I haven't. I don't know anything about college basketball.
Nobody does.
Yeah.
I like to pretend I do,
but I watch a lot of college basketball.
You went to a Duke game?
I did, and I know that Duke's pretty good.
Yeah.
I have really Duke, good. I think they can beat your boys there in Kentucky.
I got Duke losing to Kentucky in the...
Seems to be the consensus.
Yeah.
Arizona seems like they could be a wild card.
I have Arizona losing to Wisconsin in the Elite Eight because...
They played last year, right?
They played last year, and I think we're going to see a rematch of Wisconsin and Kentucky in the Final Four. They had that great game last year where Andrew Harrison made the game-winning three.
I don't remember.
The buzzer.
Who did Kentucky win last year?
No, they lost to UConn in the championship game. Kentucky was. Both of those teams weren't expected to make it that far.
Who was the favorite?
I don't know who the favorite was in that game. It was probably pretty close to a pick 'em because
ask Remus. I guarantee you, Kentucky was the favorite.
No, UK was the UK was an UK was an 8 seed last year in the tournament.
Yeah, but wasn't UConn like a 13?
No, they were higher than that. I think they were a 6, maybe. I don't think they were that low. They were
Remus will look into it.
Yeah, Remus can look into it. Anyway, so you think you have Duke? Is that what you said?
I don't remember who I picked.
You know, okay, but you know you filled out a bracket.
I can do a hockey bracket if you want.
A hockey bracket of the playoffs?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can start with that then. Why don't we'll start with the Eastern Conference because nobody pays attention to it. We're all focused on the Western Conference.
It's very top-heavy, but the top teams are good.
Yeah, the top teams are good. You know,
and I mean top all eight.
Yeah, exactly.
Even 9 with Ottawa.
Well, I mean, we'll talk to Dean Brown about the Ottawa Senators because this is a wild ride they're on, and it just keeps on going. And they have a huge game coming up against the Boston Bruins. Is that tomorrow night?
Yes, tomorrow night.
In Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the second and probably final time or that they've played them in the last week or so. Because previously, the only game that Andrew Hammond hasn't played since he started this incredible streak was that Senators lost to the Bruins.
Yeah, and Greg Anderson played that game, and you certainly could take issue with that decision. But since that game, it hasn't stopped the team at all. So maybe it was the right decision. I mean, it's hard to say, right?
It truly is an incredible run what the Senators are going on. And I mean, I still have trouble believing they're going to pull it off. But you win tomorrow night against Boston. And I mean, if you lose to Boston, I think you're done officially. If you lose to Boston tomorrow night, I think they're done. But you beat Boston tomorrow night, and all of a sudden you're 2 points behind them with still a game in hand.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the tiebreaker, mind you, and you're not going to get the tiebreaker. But when you're 2 points back, you know, with a game in hand, it's really anybody's ballgame at that point.
Well, the thing that you have to like about the Senators is just that aura about them. They're playing. It's you know, young players making an impact. Mark Stone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kyle Turris with a beautiful play last night to set up Mark Stone in overtime.
Sure.
You know, Erik Karlsson playing up to his capabilities. You have a lot of guys. You know, Eric Condra's been really good.
Mike Hoffman's been good all year.
Mike Hoffman's a very good player, Drew. So you're looking at the, if you're Brian Murray, you have to be so encouraged by who's carrying all the weight right now. And it's your young players. And that's what makes it so exciting. And I think that's why the fans are getting behind this team. Obviously, the story of Hammond is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. I mean, it's been nobody. That's why sports is great, because nobody can predict something like this. It's crazy.
Yeah. And speaking of crazy, Ezra's actually legally changed his name to Andrew Hammond as well, so he can get free McDonald's as well.
But if you look at look at who they're playing, right? The Senators are playing the Bruins on Thursday. Then they play the Leafs, Sharks. You should win both those games.
Sure.
Against teams that really are out of the playoffs now. Then you're going to play the Rangers. Then the Leafs again. Okay. Then the Panthers, and then the Red Wings. I mean, that's not the hardest schedule.
Yeah.
Then you get into April, and you have Lightning, Caps, Maple Leafs again, Pens, Rangers, and Flyers. So it gets harder in April there, but you play the Maple Leafs 3 times, Drew, over the next month. That should be 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
Boston, I think so. Boston's a good team. You don't know what's happening with, you know, when they have all their guys on board, very difficult to play against.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Ottawa's going to make it interesting. And, of course, you know, they win tomorrow, as you mentioned. It just changes everything, right? Because you're able to gain. That's a 4-point game. You're able to get within 2 points with a game in hand. So you could be even. And you look again. The three games against the Maple Leafs. I mean, the thing about this season is it's so interesting. There's just some terrible teams. Yeah. I mean, they're like basically like playing byes.
Yeah.
Seriously. I mean, they're basically, so it's like these teams are like the guy in your pool who gives up. Like Matt Leibel. You know, he gives up in the baseball season in June.
After about week 4.
Everybody plays against him and wins. Or he screws up your rotisserie league because he doesn't check his roster. That's what's happening. The Sabres are that team. The Leafs are that team. Arizona is that team. I watched Arizona the other night. Awful.
That game against Los Angeles.
Oh, they're terrible.
Did they even get a shot on goal? Did they have a scoring chance that entire game?
My God.
I mean, the Kings had a 1-0 lead in that game, and they won that game 1-0, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't think that they, for a second, were concerned about Arizona scoring.
Oh, it's an awful game. Anyhow, I mean, the Bruins schedule, you take a look at the Bruins schedule, Drew. You know, they play the Hurricanes. They do play the Maple Leafs. But those are probably their two games that they have to win. They're easier games. So I think the Senators have a little bit easier of a run there.
It'll be interesting. I mean, they've certainly made it fantastically interesting in the Eastern Conference and in the nation's capital. But, you know, why not at this point in time? You've done all this work, so why stop at this point? And you got to win on home ice tomorrow.
Yeah, and it'll be a great game. And, you know, I got to tell you another thing, too, and we'll ask Dean Brown about this. But isn't it nice to see the team succeeding considering what Brian Murray
Absolutely.
Is going through?
I mean, I was
going
to mention that.
That's really...
And great of the general managers to honor Brian Murray at the GM meetings this past week as well.
Absolutely. The GMs are classy. You know, these guys, yeah. And it's a club, and he's the guy who's been a part of that club for a long time. Not only has he been a part of the management club in many different cities, he's been a part of the coaching fraternity, too.
Sure. He's got the utmost. I mean, there's certain guys who have the utmost respect in the NHL world. He's one of them. And you're right. Terrific. Even if they fall short, it's been a great. I mean, you know he's enjoying that.
It's inspiring, isn't it? I mean, it's a great story. And it's good for the fans there. They've kind of been not really sure where the team's going since that cup run. And they had, you know, players wanting out. And, you know, but it's interesting. Spets is out now and Heatley was out. And not like those guys have gone on and
Heathley's not in the NHL anymore. Spets is on a team that's not going to make the playoffs in Dallas. And I mean, you look at the Bobby Ryan who signs the big contract. He's second in the team in points. And
he's looked really good lately. You watch him; it looks like a different player.
Well, he's engaged.
He's engaged. That's exactly what I would say about him.
When you're far away from the playoff picture, it's easy to sort of check out, as the Toronto Maple Leafs players have showed repeatedly. But all of a sudden, like, hey, you know what? We're battling. We got a goaltender who can't lose for whatever reason. Yeah. Let's go win this damn thing.
Matt Leibel's not happy with me.
Oh, is that who texted just now? I got a text as well. Okay.
Yeah,
well, you know what? In defense of you.
Ask Remus.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to interrupt, sir. Sorry, Drew. Ask Remus what I proposed this year for the rules of the pool because of Matt Leibel.
First
I called
of all,
it the Matt Leibel rule.
Leibel's not allowed in my league anymore. And Richard proposed that we have some sort of punishment for whoever finishes last place in the baseball pool. And my brother said, oh, the libel rule.
That's right.
Well, you wouldn't be upset if he finished in last place and was active throughout the entirety of the season.
That's right.
But when he checks out from his team.
In May.
And you guys are in a daily, you're talking about a daily rotisserie baseball league.
And it wasn't the first time, too.
No, there's
was his second chance.
There's the legendary case of what happened in our head-to-head baseball league a number of years ago. Hang on, is Leibel phoning now?
Some would call this libel.
Some would call this, we are committing libel against libel? Okay, we'll put libel on air. He can try and defend himself against his reputation as a fantasy baseball league killer.
One year I actually had to call him and be like, can you please set your lineup, because if you don't check your lineup, I may not get into the playoffs.
Two different leagues he was doing this in, too, not just one league.
Two leagues. Yeah.
Matthew, defend yourself.
It's not, I mean, I've called Remus on occasion to tell him to lock down his girlfriend. How is that any worse?
Well, it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but okay.
Yeah, it's unrelated.
Also, you're married, so that's just a little bit awkward for everybody.
Two years ago, I remember collecting money in that league. Last year, I may or may not have checked out mentally. It happens to the best of us. What do you want me to say? You go besmirching my name. I haven't trashed the legal curve in weeks on the big show.
I heard you called Tim Murray to tell him how to sandbag the season.
Rich, as usual, you're carrying the show. Don't let Drew bring you down.
Bye, Maddie.
Sorry.
There's Matthew Leibel trying to defend himself against the indefensible actions he's committed against our baseball leagues over the number of years.
What hole in the ground was he calling from? Some phone quality there.
Remus, that's pretty judgmental of you.
You know what? Not that we don't always tune into the big show every morning anyways, but I suspect we're in for a little bit of a rough ride tomorrow.
All the time. Everyone always tells me. Come on.
That's better that way.
Now, of course. You got to have the brotherhood, the camaraderie between shows. Otherwise, it gets a little bit awkward otherwise. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll recap the general managers meetings that took place in, I don't know, were they Florida or were they California?
They're in Florida this year, Drew.
Boca Raton, Drew.
Boca Raton.
Del Boca Vista.
Del Boca
three.
Vista. Yeah, there you go. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock. Producer Remus is here as well. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Richie, how was the concert? Playing a little Gaslight Anthem coming back from break?
Oh, the show's amazing. It was a great show.
Yeah?
Yeah, they were really good.
Okay, good. Glad you enjoyed yourself.
This is 59 Sound.
59. They played this at the concert?
They did. They played a lot off of this album, actually.
Okay.
Which is my favorite album, probably. Although American Slang is a great album, too.
There you go. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Starting tomorrow, all weekend long at Rumors, concert series event featuring TV's John Doerr. 7:45, already sold out on Friday, so be sure to get your tickets real quick. Also, still coming in March, Darren Rose from TV's Match Game, and then Saturday Night Live alumnus Jim Brewer coming up in May. Be sure to get your tickets for that. He's May 14th through 16th.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
Yeah, that'll be a great, great show. We're going to try and put something together for us group to go and check it out.
Us group?
Us group. That'd be like me and you and, you know.
Well, I know what you were trying to say, but were you really trying to say us group?
I'm okay with butchering the language, so yeah. So let's go with us group and say and just move on to talking about the general manager's meetings. How about that instead?
All right, let's do it.
Alrighty. So the general managers met at Del Boca Vista Phase 3, as we just mentioned, down in Florida, and came up with sort of three different rule changes that they're going to propose to the competition committee, then to the governors, then I'm pretty sure they have to get it passed through Congress, and then they have to ask the NHLPA a couple times, and you know, a couple other things they have to do to get it done. The first thing are the league is going to present two different formats for overtime, to propose changing overtime. Currently, of course, 5 minutes of 4-on-4, then straight to the shootout. League is going to propose the current rule that's in place in the AHL, which is the teams play 4-on-4 for the first 3 minutes, and then after the first whistle, after the 3 minute mark is expired, mm-hmm. they'll go to 3-on-3 for the remainder of the 7 minute period, or they'll go to 3-on-3 for the entire 5 minute overtime.
I don't like that. That's stupid. Would forego 4-on-4 completely?
Yeah, that's what.
Why? Why? I mean, you know, that doesn't make any sense. Who proposed that?
Well, I mean, that's what the players' representatives are going to go back and...
The only thing you'll see is the players will want it because everybody will score.
Yeah.
Everybody will score.
If you play 3-on-3 hockey for 5 minutes...
You could play it for longer than that, though. So, I mean, I don't know if that's any edge, actually. Let's not go crazy here, okay? Because you said before that it's 4-on-4 for the first 3 minutes, and then the next whistle, and then 7 minutes of 3-on-3.
No. Not 7 additional minutes of 3-on-3, just the remainder of the 7-minute overtime period is 3-on-3.
Okay. So then 3-on-3 for 5 minutes would only be liked by the players because more offense will be a result of that, and therefore they will make more money because they'll get more goals.
Well, first of all, one of the things the NHL needs to do immediately is stop counting stats that take place in 3-on-3 situations as if they were happening in a 5-on-5 situation in a game.
You know, Drew, I like the 4-on-4 idea to 3-on-3 better. I mean, let's not get crazy here. You don't go from 5 to 3. I mean, let's be reasonable. 5-4-3 in terms of 5-on-5, 4-on-4, and 3-on-3. I like 3-on-3 better than I like the shootout. I frankly don't like either of them particularly. It's not really a game when you're playing that way. I mean, that's a game of shinny. Hey, I love playing shinny, but mm-hmm. it's not National Hockey League. So again, I prefer 3-on-3 to the shootout, but I think both are pretty gimmicky. They're both gimmicky.
They certainly both are gimmicky. I mean, and I don't, you know, once you're into the very gimmicky area, and it doesn't bother
me. X ratings in baseball, I know, doesn't happen as often. They don't play 9-on-9, then 8-on-8, and then so you're playing with two fielders and three infielders. Well, I mean, that's not the way it happens.
I'll tell you what, when we were in the 18th inning at the game we went to in Philly last summer, I was willing to let them go 3-on-3 for baseball.
But I know it's different in that sense, and they don't go to the overtime as often in the other sports, except for soccer, I guess, but. We talk about the big four I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So you want to have a result, and you're more concerned with, you know, how overtime is played, because what the Jets basically play one in every three games in overtime. But I prefer to be the 4-on-4 than 3-on-3.
I'm perfectly fine, really, either way they go, if they're also willing to make the first tiebreaker just regulation wins. Yeah. You can't have regulation and overtime wins if you're playing 3-on-3 hockey.
I agree 100%. That's a great point. And another thing, Drew, you look at this. They don't ever want to go to the 3 points for the regulation win.
No.
Not because it's not fair, because frankly, I think it is fair. It's because they want to artificially create races.
Absolutely. The reason they'll never consider it is the reason that they started handing out 3-point games to begin with is to create the parity that you're seeing right now, where the Florida Panthers, for the last number of weeks, have considered themselves still in the playoff race despite 7 points behind Boston.
Despite having 6 more wins than losses and then 14 overtime and shootout losses.
Sure. I mean, that's exactly why.
And the Jets are 35-35.
Yeah, the Jets are 500. That's why anytime I look at a team's record, I've sort of been hearkening on this, and people have told me that's enough already. I look at the points. I don't look at points percentage. I look at winning percentage. And that's a much more realistic indicator of a team's talent level. Here's Darren Dreger on 3-on-3.
Yeah, that would be a consideration. And I know the Swedish Elite League is trying that. It's a 5-minute overtime period, which would obviously mimic what happens currently in the NHL, but they jump right into 3-on-3, and that's a pretty drastic adjustment.
Right.
I think that there are many managers who would prefer to go the American League route, 4-on-4 to 3-on-3, and expand the time to 7 minutes. But, again, maybe the Players Association isn't willing to do that, and then maybe they would prefer to go right into 3-on-3. So, there's at least two options there that will be discussed and further explored before going to the competition committee and then, I guess, ultimately for board approval this summer.
What do you think the NHLPA is going to recommend? I mean, I know what we just said. What do you think the NHLPA is going to do? Are they going to make a big deal out of the fact they're going to pretend to make a big deal of playing 2 extra minutes, occasionally?
Well, I mean, first off, if you're playing 3-on-3,
yeah,
you take a guy off the roster, you actually might be, you're not having all your guys playing more minutes. I mean, if you're going to be playing 3-on-3, a lot of those guys will never leave the bench.
Sure.
So, I mean, you're talking about your top guys playing a couple more minutes. 3-on-3 is not going to be exactly physical hockey, Drew. So it's not going to be wear and tear on the body, really. I think they will recommend, if they want to look at it from an economic perspective, 3-on-3 for 5 minutes will result in, to me, more offense than the possibility of playing for 3 minutes after a whistle or something like that.
I think they're going to go with 3-on-3 for the entire 5-minute period because they don't want to give an inch to the NHL and to the ownership and, we're not going to play an extra 2 minutes of hockey without any some sort of compensation in response.
Maybe that's a possibility, too.
I think everything between these two groups is a bit of a pissing match. So they'll go 3-on-3 for 5 minutes. And like you said, from the player's perspective, they'll take the extra money that will eventually line their pockets because their goal scoring totals in some regards will jump.
Well, 3-on-3 will be a goal. There'll be a goal. You won't get to shoot out much.
I can't believe that.
Not that there's a shootout, but
3-on-3 for 5 minutes. It's hard to believe that you're going to get to the shootout much more than 30% of the time.
My opinion is if you do 3-on-3 for 5 minutes and you can't score, there shouldn't be a shootout.
Just tie the game.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Sure, but they're never going to come. They're never going to bring back ties. They're always going there. I mean, it's just never going to happen.
My opinion is there shouldn't be a shootout if there's 3-on-3. If you can't score a 3-on-3 in 5 minutes, you don't deserve to have a shootout.
I would agree with that statement, too. Issue number 2 discussed at the NHL General Managers meetings, and it's going to go forward to the Board of Governors and everyone else. The Coach's Challenge on plays and video review when goaltender interference is accused, and on puck over glass plays as well.
Just slow down the game. I know it's one review and all that stuff, and they have these new HD cameras up in the HD video screens, be able to review these plays. But you know what, Drew? I think the refs actually do a pretty good job of this. They might miss the occasional call. They probably get it right more often than not. Sometimes I think it's frankly very hard to pick up whether the puck hits a stick on its way out of the zone anyways.
Sure.
And the goalie interference is a discretionary call. I think it's where you are on the ice. And it's kind of like pass interference in the CFL here on... pass interference reviews in the CFL. I just don't think they're... I just don't like it. I think it should be called in real time, and you live with it, and that's what happens.
I agree with you, especially because, you watch a game, and, I see a play that, either is disallowed for goaltender interference or there's not, or, somebody's complaining that there wasn't a call. And I'm sitting there and I honestly can't tell you sometimes. And the game is so quick, I think it's almost easier to, it's sort of counterintuitive, but I think it's sort of easier to make that judgment in real time than it is to go back and watch it frame by frame in super slow motion. It's not something like, does the puck cross a line. That is clearly you can
see. Yeah, like in basketball when they review the three-point shots after, you know, after there's a stop and play.
Is the guy's foot on the three-point line or not? Is the guy inbounds when he comes down with the ball?
I mean, they review flagrants in the NBA. I understand that, but I don't know. There's 200 points in the NBA.
I watch a lot.
They're trying to really do it for safety, I think. But yeah,
I watch a lot of college basketball, and they have some reviews of potential flagrant fouls that are ridiculous, and they take minutes upon minutes, and it just kills the entire flow of the game. And you know, I understand why no general manager wants to lose a playoff series or lose a playoff game, and no coach wants to be fired because of a blown goaltender interference call or a blown puck over glass call. If I can watch the, if I'm watching it on replay and I'm not 100% clear cut sure about it, I have trouble, you know, putting that into the judgment of an official watching it on a monitor.
Yeah, like I would tend to agree with you, Drew. I mean, do we really need to review? This is only going to open it up, the floodgates up for other reviews.
Yeah, but you're only allowed to review it. The rule, the coach's challenge.
You have a timeout, so now nobody's going to use their timeout just to give their players a rest because they're going to have to review a goal.
Yeah, it's just one of those unnecessary stoppages in the NHL. And I mean, you know, you already got the three TV timeouts per period, which is fine. I get the TV's not going anywhere.
Yeah, of course.
But the beauty of hockey is sort of the flow to
absolutely.
It and the speed. Absolutely. And if all of a sudden you're reviewing everything and you're slowing it down and you're going to a TV monitor, the human element I'm okay with in certain instances.
I'm with you. I mean, it's old fashioned, I guess, but does everything need to be reviewed? Do we need this? Do we need that? Just let them play the game a bit. Okay, you already have the refs calling way too much because you're trying to artificially inflate offense.
Sure. Yeah, you are certainly trying to do that. And the final item that was reviewed.
Boy, it's been a long time for them to review these three things. Boy, I wonder if they're golfing at all down there.
Oh, you don't think that they're you don't think
like 20 meters? There's like 35 media members down there, and there's 30 GMs down there, and I'm pretty sure they work for half a day,
if that.
The GMs. I never mind the media. I mean, the media has to follow the GMs around.
Sure.
They must be following them on the golf course, asking them what they thought.
They're chasing after them in golf carts, is what's happening right now. It is a little bit ridiculous. I mean, they're certainly not, you know, cracking in a boardroom.
Couldn't this have been decided over email? Haven't they ever heard of mass email?
you're absolutely right. It's also not that this hasn't been discussed ad nauseum.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
What has changed? You know, I'm sure these were the same topics at last year's general managers meetings. What's happened between this time last year and this time this year that's decided now we need to implement it?
Yeah, I don't know. I also find it a weird time to do it.
Like, so right after
why not
the trade
after
deadline?
The season, really, when the season's over?
Well, I'll tell you what. Why not do it? You know, why not have this meeting?
I'll tell you why.
Right before the trade deadline, where general managers can actually sit and talk and maybe even make some more trades.
That's interesting.
You know,
I figure they're not going to have it in the summer, not because when the season's over, it's too hot. Yeah, it's too hard.
Too hot in Florida and Palm Springs. Exactly. They want to do it in February or March.
What's the third stroke of genius here?
It comes courtesy of Ron Francis.
Yeah, this one's stupid.
A new face-off rule proposed by Hurricanes general manager Ron Francis that would require the defensive player to put his stick on the ice first during face-offs, including those in the neutral zone. Now, if I'm not mistaken, right now the road player,
yes, that's right,
the player who is on the visiting team always has to put his stick down first.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Francis is now proposing you get rid of the visitor home aspect of it. It's whatever team is on the defensive side of the draw has to put his stick down first, thus putting himself and his team at a disadvantage.
Yeah, artificially inflating offense again. I think the one thing that I don't like about this is how meaningless is the regular season going to become.
Yeah.
And by that I mean, if you play all season for home ice and it's all about last change and just that one extra game, I mean the little edges in the game matter, Drew. So the home ice advantage matters because you're gonna have a better face-off percentage on home, generally speaking, than on the road. Like you get your stick down last, you get to see where the guy's putting his stick if you're taking draws. Mm-hmm. Now you're gonna say, okay, let's get rid of that. Let's just make it on the defensive guy puts it down on his side of the red line because we want to create more offense again. Never mind getting rid of the massive bulky goalie equipment that's unnecessary. Okay? So you do that, and these guys play 82 games for what? For one game at home, and for last change, that's it? You have to give them some incentive.
Sure.
They're going to start resting players all the time in the regular season. People are paying $200 a ticket. They're going to start doing like the NBA does. Not playing half their team.
Yeah.
I don't like that rule. I mean, I understand where he's coming from. I just don't like it.
Let's head to break. When we come back,
artificial rules to create offense. You know, think of I don't mind ideas like this, but let's get more of them. That should be the idea. The reason they should be meeting is to talk about creating offense.
Well, they do that in the off season when they have that sort of innovation meeting, innovation camp.
I know, but I the GMs are all together. If they're going to be meeting, if they're going to be spending their time in, you know, the golf course, whatever it may be. Three on three, like that is just an artificial way. I want to hear, like, how are you going to create offense in a 5-on-5 setting?
Well, the only way they're going to do it, and they know this, the only way they're going to do it...
You make the ice bigger? I don't think that's going to make scoring any better.
Oh, I don't think make the ice bigger is the answer. We saw that doesn't work in the Olympics. The only way they're going to do it is to get rid of about six teams, and that's not happening.
Maybe. I think the goal equipment could be smaller, too.
The problem with the goal equipment...
And I think shot blocking could be... You know, that idea, I didn't actually hate the Bob Gainey crazy idea, they say, of not being able to block shots.
You can't go down to block a shot.
Certain things I don't mind.
That's, I don't know.
Again, just the idea. I don't like that the Ron Francis idea, but I like that there is an idea.
Sure. They need more of that. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, burning questions for the clear-cut playoff teams, Eastern Conference edition.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
20 after 7 here on TSN 1290. This is NHL Midweek. Still to come on the show, Dean Brown, Ottawa Senators play-by-play voice, going to join us in about 10 minutes' time. This segment brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards, for locations, hours, and more. Check them out online at royalsports.me. Having one of our usual in-break disagreements, Remus is landing on the side that he's a big fan of the sitcom Friends. Richard falls on the side that he thinks Friends was quite overrated.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, Friends, Remus, I can't believe you watch. And like, you watch it now. That's what
we were discussing, is that Remus, when the show's done, Remus is going to go to hashtag Leah's house, his girlfriend,
and watch Friends
on Netflix.
That's right. It's on Netflix, and I surf the channel a lot when I get home, especially on Wednesdays. There's not much on other than hockey. And look, we've sat here talking about hockey for 2 hours. Sometimes I need a break.
That's fair. It's fair.
And I'm at the girlfriend's, too.
No one's criticizing that you're...
Okay,
that
so I need something on in the background and that I can just like relax to and not really I can half watch it. So you put it on Friends. It's a great show.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's a great show. I think, it's at the end, yes, it tailed off, but at the first, you know, three seasons, great television, great sitcom.
Remus, you're ruining your credibility here, man.
I don't care. It's a good show.
He had credibility?
Yeah, that's also a good point.
I'm about to run his credibility over with a bus right now when I ask him, Remus, did you enjoy this week's episode of Girls?
Actually, I did. It was a good episode. And I believe the show has jumped the shark. But I was entertained, except for a few scenes where it's really uncomfortable.
You know what's jumped the shark? The phrase, jump the shark.
I don't think so.
I'm with Remus. Jump the shark's still in.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I think you jumped the shark, Drew.
I've jumped the shark years ago.
Well, what would you say, Drew, in place of jump the shark? I think it's a great phrase.
I prefer ye old English, so I'd go with something like passé.
Old English.
Yeah, if I can find a...
Where's Ezzy?
Okay.
Ezzy just passed out in Vegas, probably, unfortunately. Yeah. He heard that segment and, you know, everything else.
Ye old English.
That's right. Burning questions from... There's 13 playoff teams in the NHL.
I know Drew like the ye old fry truck in Kenora. I didn't know you had ye old English.
Hey, if the ye old fry truck was outside right now, then I'd be making some radio magic. There's 13 teams in the NHL that I've declared as shoo-ins for the playoffs.
Well, you've declared.
I've declared them.
You wrote this, by the way?
I wrote this.
Oh, I thought you brought this off TSN.ca.
No, this is complete Drew.
Wow.
I'm
impressed.
Well, thank you. I'm glad. There's 7 teams that are clearly in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Everybody but the Boston Bruins. And in the Western Conference, there's 6 teams. The 3 teams in the Central Division, the Ducks. I put the Canucks in there just for argument's sake, even though I'm not 100% convinced. And the Minnesota Wild, I've declared as a shoo-in. We're going to spend some of the remainder of the show going through the burning questions for each of these teams as we approach the end of the regular season and the start of the playoffs. We'll start with the Montreal Canadiens. They're currently atop the Atlantic Division with 95 points, tied for the most in the Eastern Conference and really the NHL with the Ducks, the Blues, and the New York Rangers.
I thought you were going to ask me Ross or Joey. Are their names on the show?
That is their names. Ross, yeah. Joey, and Chandler.
Good one.
Yeah. The Habs are the only team in a playoff position that give up more shots on goal than it takes. How concerned should the Habs be about this?
Well, it's not a good thing, but you have Carey Price between the pipes, Drew, so I think you should be concerned. I would be concerned, and if I'm Michel Therrien, I mean, you know, how do you change that? I don't think you... I mean, personnel is really probably how you change that, so that's going to be an issue. I would be more concerned if Carey Price was not between the pipes, I'll put it that way. Like, if they had a... Even an above-average goaltender, mm-hmm. with that, I would be very concerned. But because he is right now probably the best goaltender in the National Hockey League, I'd be less concerned. But to be able to go through four rounds, I mean, that's what their aspirations are when they're, you know, as high as they are in the standings. It's going to be tough.
I mean, obviously, you've watched a lot of the Habs this year, and, yeah. you know, because they're an entertaining team to watch.
Yeah.
I haven't got the impression, though, that, you know, that they're sort of, you know, riding Carey Price into the ground, even though they've given up all these more shots yeah. than a lot of the other teams.
Well, you know, Drew, it's so matchup based because the Habs are so quick. You know, they get on you, they can skate. Now, if you play against Tampa Bay, which they've had trouble with this year, mm-hmm. that team can also skate,
sure.
and you could certainly argue they have more skill.
I would say
than
their
the Habs.
Their top level talent is better.
Exactly. So that's where you get into problems when you play against a team like the Bruins, for example. You know, the Bruins give Tampa trouble, mm-hmm. but, you know, the Habs have given the Bruins trouble before, but the Bruins would also give... It depends. The idea is the matchups, right? If the Habs play Detroit and Lightning, they might be playing similar styles, but not as much talent, and teams that can skate with them. But you look at the... You play the Bruins or somebody like that, well, you can maybe skate circles around them. So it really is dependent. I would be concerned, but again, people have to stop saying that, oh, you know, if they didn't have Carey Price, they have Carey Price.
Sure.
Well, Nashville has Pekka. I know Nashville's been tanking lately, but they have Pekka in it. You don't have to apologize for having Dominik Hasek when you're Buffalo going to the Cup against Dallas. That's just the facts are you have a great goaltender.
Sure. Moving to Tampa Bay, you just mentioned them. They're second in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah.
Ben Bishop, been very good for them all year long. He's never played an NHL playoff game and has only played one playoff game total in the past 9 seasons. Should the Lightning be concerned about inexperienced goaltending come playoff time?
That's a good one, a good question, Drew, because he's been solid. I mean, he certainly hasn't been dominant by any means, and I would be a little bit concerned because, I'll put you this way, because Tampa has their sights set, you know, you trade the first round pick, you get Braden Coburn, and you have some injuries there, but you go for, you're basically, you know, you think you can win the Cup this year. That's what I believe Tampa Bay thinks. Mm-hmm. So you're going with Ben Bishop, who hasn't played a game in the playoffs, but he hasn't played more than a game in the playoffs before.
Yeah.
And you're expecting to win, to go to the Cup. You know, now granted, they know every other team is close to as good as they are, and it's very tough in the Eastern Conference. But when you have a goalie who's no experience, whose your goal is 4 rounds,
yeah.
it's a lot different than when you come in as, you know, as an underdog, and you let your guy, not that young, but you let him kind of work his way in. You know, a bad goal or two goes through him there, and it's early, and he loses his confidence, sure. I mean, you have to be concerned about that. Do I think he's going to perform? I don't know. But again, playoffs are a different beast.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pressure. And, you know, he goes in and you look at the matchups today and who knows how it'll change. But you go into Detroit, Thomas Tatar rips a couple goals past you. Or in Tampa in game one, for example, if they play in game one in Tampa against Detroit, you start losing your confidence. You've never been there before. So, yeah, I would be a little concerned.
He played one game for the Peoria Rivermen in 2010-2011. Before that, his last playoff game was in 2004, playing for the Texas Tornado, and I don't mean Kerry Von Erich, of the North American Hockey League. So that's 11 years ago.
Yeah.
That's a long time to go between playoff games. We'll wrap up the Atlantic Division because we're going to bring in Dean Brown.
I wonder what Olli Jokinen thinks of that.
About lack of playoff experience. Yeah. Well, Ole's an expert on that. So I'm not sure he's going to get much more with St. Louis, yeah. except from the press box. The Red Wings, Thomas Tatar and Gustav Nyquist, they're obviously taking on more important roles with the team. Mm-hmm. Are they ready to handle the load in the playoffs if Datsyuk and Zetterberg begin to feel the effects of father time?
I think so. These guys are real good. And I'll tell you why. You know, you could say, oh, well, first off, Thomas Tatar with the Grand Rapids Griffins, in 12-13, had 21 points in 20. He had 16 goals. 16 goals in 24 playoff games. Okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a team that was a real good team in the AHL. You can see why, because they have all these guys coming now. And Nyquist has played in the playoffs before and performed well for Grand Rapids, 7 points in 10 games. But the thing is, goaltending is different than forwards. The pressure, and a team like Detroit has so many options at forward. These are their top guys, and they're great. They're great. I like both of them. Really skilled. Tatar can shoot it. Nyquist is shifty. But you don't have the same pressure, because you still have, I know Datsyuk's hurt right now, but Datsyuk, Zetterberg, they're still there. They're looked at with the pressure. You can still kind of slide under the radar. When you're a goaltender, you can't do that. So I certainly feel more confident about the Detroit aspect of that than I do Tampa.
We'll come back to this following the Dean Brown interview. Let's head to break. Mr. Brown is next. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
7:30 in the evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's the voice of the Ottawa Senators on TSN Radio in Ottawa, Dean Brown. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and thanks for joining us this evening.
Hey, no problem.
Dean obviously brought you on to talk about one of the wildest rides we've seen here in the NHL in the last number of years, that being what Andrew Hammond is performing, the performance he's been putting on as of late for the Senators. I mean, in your wildest imagination, did anybody see this coming? You know, when he took over as, you know, the starting goaltender, largely due to injury, did anybody think Andrew Hammond could pull off a 11-0-1 stretch?
No. And Andrew Hammond, I'm sure, didn't think he could. There's nothing in his history anywhere along the way at any level of hockey that comes anywhere close to this kind of domination. You know, even when he was in college, he didn't win a game his first year, and he only won 6 games in his first 2 years in college at Bowling Green. He was on a terrible team, and actually that probably actually was one of the things that helped him advance as much, because he saw so many shots while he was in college, because for the first 2 years the team at Bowling Green was terrible. But yeah, no one saw this coming, including him. You know, he was not a dominant goalie in the AHL. He was not a dominant goalie in junior. He was not a dominant goalie in college. So no, I think anybody who says they saw this coming was maybe telling a bit of a nose stretcher there, because I don't think even Andrew Hammond saw this coming.
You look at, you know, Dean, he's interviewed, he just seems like a pretty likable guy. Has that made the story even better?
It makes it a lot easier to tell, because he's able to do coherent interviews because he's not a kid. You know, he's it tells you about his hockey career, because he actually quit hockey twice. That's why he's a 27-year-old NHL rookie. He's only been playing professional hockey for a year and a half. He got out of college late as a 25-year-old because he started college late because he quit hockey twice. So, wow. You know, at 27, even though he's, you know, an NHL rookie, he has a bigger, a better perspective on life and more ability to really understand where he is and what this is all about, because he's not a kid. You know, he has some spatial awareness about where he is in the hockey world and how he got there and how wild this ride is, and he appreciates and he understands it. And he's also at 27 more able to articulate that to reporters. And since those of us in this business and reporters, we are the conduit between, you know, the players, the game, the coaches, the managers, and the public. You know, if you can tell your story coherently to a reporter, then it is, you would expect, coherently told to the public. And so his story is very open and plain for everyone to see, and he seems very casual telling it, because he's not a kid and he's more able to be, at peace with where he is and have a true understanding of where he is.
Our guest is Ottawa Senators play-by-play voice Dean Brown. We're discussing the Senators and their recent hot play that's got them back into the wild card race in the NHL's Eastern Conference. Probably the next biggest game of the season for the Senators. They've been probably playing those games for the last couple weeks. Comes tomorrow night in Ottawa as the Bruins and the Senators meet. 4 points separating the two teams right now, with the Senators having a game in hand. You know, if the Senators win tomorrow night against Boston, is there any reason why they can't overtake the Bruins and end up in that second wild card spot?
Sure. Oh yeah, there's lots of reasons why they can't. You know, it's not just the Bruins, and it's not just where they are. It's where you have to end up, and I think sometimes during these races, especially the fans get really tied up in how close they are to the next team. But there's other teams playing other games after you're done playing the Bruins. Certainly winning the game tomorrow night against the Bruins gives you a big up in your trek to try and get a spot, because you've obviously won 2 points, but if you do it in regulation, it's 2 points that Boston doesn't get, which are equally as important. But the reality is, if you take the broader view, eliminate Boston and Washington from the conversation and just look at points. You know, it has taken most years in the Eastern Conference between 93 and 94 points to grab the eighth playoff spot. Based on where Boston is, where Washington is, their winning percentages, it's more likely this year that it's going to take 95, 96, maybe 97 points to get the final playoff spot. So really what Ottawa has to look at, and any team in the chase has to look at, is not how many points behind the next team you are today. It's at the end of the regular season, how many points do you have to get? And so with Ottawa now having 79 points, they have to, in their last games, have to find a way to try and get between 95 and 97 points to have a realistic shot at eighth. And the Boston game is certainly an important one, but no more important than the other ones, because if they beat Boston tomorrow night and then lose 4 straight games, they're done. You know what I mean? So the Boston game is obviously very important, but you have to look at the math at the end of the road, not what's in front of you today.
You know, Dean, you look at this team, obviously Hammond has been the story, but Mark Methot, he signs that extension, slots in beside Erik Karlsson. How important has he been in maybe kind of steadying that back end and steadying the team overall?
Huge. Huge. There's no question about that. Well, he was injured. They tried virtually everybody playing with Erik Karlsson, and there was varying degrees of success. But the reality is, I think one of the things that helped him a great deal in his contract negotiations with the team and signing his new extension was the fact that the captain and the best player on the team, and Erik Karlsson, made it very clear to everybody that the guy he feels most comfortable playing with is Mark Methot, and the guy he wants to play with is Mark Methot, and the guy he feels meshes best with his game is Mark Methot. So if you're a hockey team and your best player and your captain has just told everybody that's who he wants and why he wants him, then you have to look at part of Methot's contract as not only money you're paying Mark Methot to be a good hockey player for your hockey team, but also some, some calming money that your best player is calm because he's playing with the guy he wants to play with. And I think that is certainly the case, and that is certainly why this team has played better. When your most impactful player outside of your goaltender is at ease and now playing the very best hockey of the season for him, then there is a direct tie. There is a complete correlation between Mark Methot and that success. And not that he is doing it himself, but he is creating that cradle that Karlsson likes to rock in. And if you do that, if you do something that makes Karlsson a better player, then this team wins more. So that is worth both the money and the effort you took to both keeping him around and signing him for a longer term.
Our guest on NHL Midweek is Ottawa Senators play-by-play voice Dean Brown. You can hear Dean on our sister station, TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Dean, you know, in addition to the play of Andrew Hammond, which is certainly the talk of all the NHL, you know, it's got to be reassuring for Senators fans to see that some of their younger players are really stepping up in the course of this playoff push. Mark Stone in particular had a big goal last night against the Carolina Hurricanes.
What a pass, too.
Yeah, and great pass, of course. You know, how great has it been, or how exciting has it been for Senators fans to see their young guys sort of coming into their own in the course of this run?
Well, you know, whether this team does in fact catch up and win a playoff spot or not, what the fans here in Ottawa have seen is really I think a credit to what Brian Murray and assistant general manager Pierre Dorion and Randy Lee have both been doing and what they've been telling the fans, which is we didn't make any deals at the trade deadline because we believe the young core of this team going forward is going to make for a very strong team down the road. Not right now, because it is the youngest team in the league that has as a group, they have played the fewest number of games in the NHL. It is the least experienced team in the NHL, but just trust us, these kids, when they start to grow up, are going to be a very good team. And now in the second half of the season, the fans are understanding what the team has been telling them and why the team has been so devoted to building through the draft. This team right now on its active roster is playing 18 of its own draft picks. There's no other team in the league that plays more of its own draft picks than this team. So when you have guys like Mark Stone and you have guys like Mike Hoffman, who are legitimate candidates for the Rookie of the Year and are two of the most dominant forwards in the league, no matter whether you're talking rookies or not, that tells fans that they're going in the right direction. When you have, you know, two players like that who, you know, on a team that is filled with so many other young players, can generate things without the veterans' help. Because on this team, I don't know if anybody's realized, but one of the other things it has is the least number of veterans. This team has the fewest number of 30-plus players in the league. They have only four, and right now, two of them are injured. There's only two 30-year-old players on this team. David Legwan, who's a fourth-line center, and the goaltender, Craig Anderson. Phillips and Neal are both injured. This team, on a day-by-day basis, only has two players that are on the roster, the active roster, playing games that are over 30. And so these young players have to do it themselves. They don't have the old guys to lead the way, at least on the ice, because they don't exist. And so that's what the fans are optimistic about. So they would love here in Ottawa for Ottawa to make the playoffs, clearly. That, you know, that goes without saying. But if Ottawa doesn't make the playoffs, it's not like they haven't seen what they hope the future will be, because the youth on this team has, especially in the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, really shown what the possibilities might be down the road.
You know, Dean, it feels like longer ago that the Senators let Paul McLean go as coach of the team. And December 8th, it was that the team fired Paul McLean, and Dave Cameron's come in. How has he changed things there? I mean, not only maybe in how he employs the, you know, his lines and everything else, but how about mindset in terms of the team, motivation, and all those factors?
I think there's probably three big things, three big differences. One of them is, especially amongst the leadership group on this team, they feel with this coach they have more of a say, where when they have meetings and they bring their opinions to the table that they're listened to. I know that Paul had an open-door policy and players could walk in and talk to him at any time, and that was true. But a lot of the players, especially the veteran players and the part of the leadership group, never felt that while they were speaking that anyone was listening. That's a major problem in today's athletics and professional athletics. If you're not a coach that has his players truly thinking that their voice is being heard, you can debate whether you do or don't think that's the right way to run a team, but in today's game, you have to have that kind of communication with your core players. Otherwise, you're unemployed. Number one. Number two, the style of play, the system that Ottawa was running was very similar to what Detroit ran 5 years ago when Paul was an assistant coach in Detroit. I guess that's what he fell in love with. And for that time on that team, it was extremely successful. However, trying to implement that kind of a system in Ottawa where, you know, they don't have Nick Lidstrom or Brian Rafalski or Zetterberg or Datsyuk, it was a lot of trying to put round pegs into square holes. It wasn't working, and Paul was very stubborn about how he wanted the team to play, but the style of play was not suited to the kind of personnel Ottawa had. And Dave Cameron has come in, and the style that he has embraced is more a style that's suited to the kind of roster that Ottawa has. And I think number three, and maybe the most important thing, is kind of an adage that Brian Murray, the general manager, had when he was a coach, and that is that every player has to have a role clearly defined for him. What is expected? What you want him to do? What is his job? So there's complete clarity on what you want from him, number one. But number two is that he can embrace that. And whether he plays 8 minutes or 18 minutes, his job is important, and his job is different from that guy's and different from that guy's. And if he does his job well, the team can win. And it's a way of making every player on the team feel important in their role on the team. If some players feel like they're not important, it's hard to have a team. And I think it's very clear on this team that that Dave Cameron has done a far better job in making every player on the team feel that his role is important.
Final question for you, Dean. You mentioned Brian Murray, and we were talking about it off air and even on air earlier in the show, how you're rooting for Ottawa. Brian Murray is obviously going through a difficult time, and the team is kind of, you know, making this run here. And of course, he was just honored by the general managers at the GM meetings in Florida. Can you speak? You've been with the Ottawa Senators for a long time, of course. Can you speak to, you know, how things are going with Brian Murray, and of course, you know, how he deserves all the accolades he's been receiving?
Yeah, you know, I think if Brian didn't have terminal cancer, that the accolades would be just as deserving. You know, he has spent his entire life in hockey, and he was a teacher before he got into hockey. And if you look back at his career, he was a teacher really through most of hockey. You know, as a coach, he was known as a guy who was a player's coach and a teaching coach. And I think that's one of the most important things to Brian. And I think right now, you know, Brian is the first one who will tell you he's a no BS guy. When somebody asks him, and like, you know, people want to be delicate with their questions, but Brian's the one who tells people, no, this will kill me. this will kill me. There's no chance. There's no operation I can have. There's nothing I can do. He takes chemo to stay alive, but this will kill him. And what he has done, the thing that I think is amazing that Brian has done is not just speak openly about this, but the campaign that he has gone on to plead with people. He asks people, when you talk to me about this, when you go on the air or you write your stories, I will talk to you about this and I'll tell you anything you want to know. But my request of you is when you write this, you ask people to go out and get a colonoscopy. Don't, you know, it's not something to be ashamed of. It's not something to be bashful of. But if he would have had a colonoscopy 10 years ago, like the team doctors told him he should just because he was at that age, his colon cancer would have been detected and likely taken out and dealt with and never would have gotten to the stage it is now. And he knows that and he openly talks about it. And I think the thing that Brian has done, you know, through his terminal cancer and however long he's got left, is that he is not asking for anyone's sympathy, but what he's asking for is their attention to their own bodies and to their own families, and to make sure you do what you need to do to make sure you're around for your family. And ironically enough, you look around the league, you know, in St. Louis, all the coaching staff and the management staff, because of that, all went out and had colonoscopies during the All-Star break. And it turns out one of their coaches, Brad Shaw, had a polyp that was precancerous, but had a polyp that he didn't know he had, and they removed it. And also the general manager had some polyps, and they had them all removed and would not have known had they had colonoscopies. And the only reason they had colonoscopies is because Brian Murray is asking everyone in the hockey world to take this seriously and do it for not just for yourself, but more importantly, do it for your family. And so Brian, even though this is going to kill him, he has turned it into a teaching moment for all of us. And it's just one of many reasons why he is truly a great, great man in our game.
Dean Brown is the Ottawa Senators play-by-play voice, and we echo those the comments from Brian Murray to go get a colonoscopy and then get that checked out. Dean, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for doing this.
Anytime, boys.
Take care, Dean. Let's head to break. You're listening to the NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
We'll forego the usual Bruce Springsteen in the final segment to play a little bit of the Friends theme song, picking up on our conversation from earlier in the show. This segment of the show, the final segment of the show for this Wednesday, is brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery.
Go to Not Auto Corp, pick up a two-door car, because if you tell them you watch Friends, you don't have many friends.
Oh.
So you just drive nice. Whatever you want.
A nice, yes. Very nice. What? I believe there was an episode of Friends where they had a fancy sports car, the kind that you could get from the good people
at Porsche.
Not Auto Corp.
Yeah, Joey fake drove a Porsche.
Why do you know about that, Drew? I thought you were putting a Remus that he's a Friends guy.
I don't currently watch Friends, but in the day when it was on, I don't watch the repeats of Friends, and I wouldn't watch it on Netflix like Remus does, but I mean, I certainly have seen my fair share of episodes of Friends in the past.
Why the hate, Richard?
Well, the show is so overrated. I mean,
shout out to Rob _ Winnipeg on Twitter, tweeted at me that he watches it too.
Well, I mean, we can also get into the fact that Frasier was considered to be like the best show ever, which it was, by all the critics, like over Seinfeld and all that.
You know what show is very funny, and I believe it is also available on Netflix, is Cheers.
Cheers is a great show. See, I will go with you there. To me, it's Seinfeld 1, Cheers 2.
Cheers 2?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Over Curb?
I mean Seinfeld and Curb is kind of the same thing. Yeah. Cheers is a great show, though.
Yeah, Cheers is very funny. And
Ted Danson.
Yes, exactly. Anyways.
Everything's like heaven with that guy.
For more information...
That's from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay. For more information, check Not Auto Corp online at notautocorp.com. Continuing with our burning questions for the Eastern Conference playoff teams, the teams that are shoo-ins in the playoffs for the Eastern Conference, the New York Rangers.
My mom's calling me out for knowing two of the character names, but knowing two of the character names on the show is different than citing episode with a car.
You definitely know all the character names on Friends.
Okay, I can probably do this. Ross, Chandler, who's the other one? Joey, Rachel, and then there's two others. Is Rachel? Is Courtney Cox Rachel? Is that
no,
Jennifer Aniston?
Jennifer Aniston's Rachel.
Courtney Cox is...
Starts with an M.
I don't know.
Monica.
And then Lisa Kudrow is somebody else.
Phoebe.
Yeah, yes. I wouldn't have got all those.
Also her sister, Ursula.
Wasn't Tom Selleck on the show?
Tom Selleck was on the show as Monica's romantic
Tom
interest.
Selleck was very good on Celebrity Jeopardy and the Saturday Night Live reunion.
Yes, the fake Tom Selleck. Yeah. Also,
that was Burt Reynolds.
Reynolds.
I always mix those guys up.
Yeah, they both have mustaches. That's pretty much the similarity I think you're getting confused with. New York Rangers. If a team neutralizes Rick Nash come playoff time, can the Rangers score enough to win?
That was the one tip-off that it wasn't off TSN. Because they have St. Louis. I know he's injured. St. Louis, Stepan.
Rick Nash has about 20% of the Rangers' goals this
year. That's fine, Drew. That's fine. But there's a skill level there.
Sure.
Okay? I mean, Zuccarello, I mean, maybe not the points here, not your scorer, but he's a passer. Kevin Hayes probably dish it out pretty well, too. They have a bunch of guys in the back end that can score. I don't have any issues with that team scoring. I really don't. Very good team. You could argue the best team in the league. We said this last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You could argue the best team in the league. If Rick Nash doesn't score, I still think they can score enough. Remember, I mean, with that back end, with Lundqvist doing media and coming back, and Talbot's been great, it's going to be tough to score on them.
Cleared to practice.
Yeah.
Henrik Lundqvist is cleared to practice. Obviously been out with that blood clot issue that's now healed. So it sounds like he'll be back and you know, ready for the playoffs.
Moving. What's a goaltending controversy? No, I'm kidding.
It's not getting carried away. Moving down. I'll tell you what, though. If Cam Talbot keeps playing like he is, you know, that's, you know, the Rangers have traded away, I think, first round picks for the next millennium.
Yeah.
They could use Cam Talbot as a trade chip in the offseason.
Yeah, but goaltenders have such a little value, though.
I know. But, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
on the market, not to your team.
Edmonton will overpay for somebody.
That's fair.
Yeah. If Cam Talbot an Alberta guy? Did I make that up?
I don't know.
You know, Remus, check on that. I think he might be. New York Islanders, speaking of goaltenders.
Yeah.
Is Yaroslav Halak a good enough goaltender to win the Stanley Cup with?
You asked me years ago in Montreal. You say, oh, yeah, for sure. I don't think he is, Drew. They are a really good team. They can really skate, but they do leave their goalie out to dry a bit. And he's got to be able to save them. And I don't think he can for four rounds. Again, you're talking about a team that has aspirations of making a long run here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he can be that guy for all four of those rounds. I think he can be, in flashes, he can be good. But put it to you this way. St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
They have aspirations of winning the Cup.
Sure.
They had him. Mm-hmm. They decided he wasn't good enough. And they play a much more open system in the island than they did in St. Louis.
Cam Talbot from Caledonia, Ontario. So I'm a little bit wrong there.
Yeah. That's close, actually, though. A lot wrong. But
yeah. I mean, a couple provinces away. But Canadian, at least. I got the Canadian part.
That's part of it.
Get half credit or something. The Pittsburgh Penguins. Is there something wrong with Sidney Crosby?
Well, I don't think you can ask that now. Because it's a long season, Drew. And this is a team that knew they were going to be in the playoffs the whole way.
Sure.
So if they flame out of the playoffs, and I think they could go either way. Like, they could be out in six. They can make, and that kind of speaks to every team, but especially this team. Yeah. Like, this team, it's not, I mean, this team has the guys, you know, that have been there that can get there and can dominate. But also, I mean, is there an issue with the way that they're structured? Is their defense good enough? Can Fleury do it? So there are questions. But I think part of me thinks Crosby is going to go bananas in the playoffs and just take over and has kind of been coasting. I kind of feel like some of these teams have put it, you know, they've just put it on cruise control, and then when the games get big, they'll turn it on a bit. So we'll see.
We've created a monster when it comes to this friends conversation throughout the course of the show.
Why? What happened?
Patrick Perrin 16 tweets at us and says that the actor that played Jim Craig in the movie Miracle, about the Miracle on Ice, also was Rachel's assistant on the show. So, you know, we've really created a monster here. Final question when it comes to burning questions for the Eastern Conference playoff teams. Is regular season Alex Ovechkin ready to perform the same way in the playoffs for Barry Trotz?
Is he ready to play? I don't necessarily. Yeah, Drew, I don't have really concerns about whether Ovechkin is able to have his game translate from regular season to playoffs. I think he's made that adjustment over the course of the regular season with Trotz and buying in and the way they play as a team. Their defense is so much better too. I don't have that much concern about Ovechkin, to be honest.
We'll get to the Western Conference teams on Saturday's Illegal Curve Show, 12 noon on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guests today, Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and Dean Brown from TSN 1200. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, get sent to your iPod each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli, also Royal Sports and Not Auto Corp. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Remus and my analyst Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday at 12 noon, we wish you good night and good luck.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.